You're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio. This is Raylan. I'm talking with John DiNardo, and I have a feeling that he is blowing your minds with some of the things that he is saying. We were just talking about Dr. Harrington of the Naval Observatory there in Washington. The Vice President's home is on Naval Observatory property, and he was cancer-sighted. Is that what you're saying, John?
Yes, I and others believe that he was, because he had, Dr. Harrington had been devoting his life to the study of, search for Planet X. In fact, NASA actually has a document, a secret document, and as we know, you can check this out, NASA's policy is that everything they publish is secret unless authorized for release to the public. So it's a secret agency, just like the National Security Agency. In fact, NASA is under the aegis of the National Security Agency.
I always thought that simply because of the similarity of their names,
right,
or so the initials in the names.
Right. So these are secret agencies, and they have put out a document which was confidential, top secret or whatever, and it's... James McCanney, again, I have him on the radio, so I can't be accused of distorting his statement, but he says he has in his possession, and I guess others do. I think you can find it on the Internet, a document from NASA titled The Search for Planet X. So NASA itself mentions the name Planet X and the fact that they're searching for it. Dr. Harrington led this search with the U.S. Naval Observatory, spent most of his career looking for it, and what he found from his calculations was that it was coming in, and the last I have been able to see from his papers, Dr. Harrington's papers, written in 1988, is that it's coming in from the direction of the constellation Scorpius. Now, others have said constellation Orion, but I have to go by what Harrington has, you know, what I could find from Harrington, because he's the most respected astronomer. He says it's coming in from the direction of Scorpius, but it's definitely coming in. Now, around 1990-91 is when he had, either he went there personally or he had a team go down to close to the South Pole where you can view this thing coming in, this object, Planet X, down to Black Birch Observatory in New Zealand, very close to the South Pole. And they took these blink comparator photographs where this was a technique developed by the great noted astronomer Clyde Tombaugh, who was the discoverer of the planet Pluto. The blink comparison method is a way of discovering an object in the star-studded sky filled with millions and millions of stars to find one object that may be moving. And what they do is they take a photograph, they make a negative of it, and lighten it with the light in the background of the entire night sky. Then the next night you take another photograph, and the next night you take another photograph, etc. And they superimpose these negatives on a lighted table or a lighted platform so that you can view them, each one lighted separately. But they're both perfectly superimposed over one another. And then they flash a light onto each one of them, through each one of them, alternately. And if you flash the light at the right frequency, you can see movement of anything that has happened to be moved from one picture to another, where there's a different position. You can see the movement, or the apparent movement, in these photos, even though the photos contain millions of stars, because all the others that are stationary, there will be no apparent movement as you flash from one picture to the other, or blink from one to the other. Anyway, this is how they found Planet X was there, just where Dr. Harrington had calculated that it was. And indeed, they found that it was traveling toward our solar system and was about to intrude into our solar system some years into the future, from 1988 or 1991. And when he was about to reveal this to the public, because this was a great find, this was the greatest honor that any astronomer could expect, is to find the Planet X, which many astronomers in the past had been looking for. He died. He died of esophageal cancer within a couple weeks. This is
unheard of. This is one of the worst to die from.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if you ate food, if he ate eggs that had been injected with radioactive material,
yeah. What would it happen?
It hits the esophagus, and then it coats the esophagus with this radioactive material.
Yeah.
Or peanut butter or whatever. I know Michael Levine talked about the peanut butter sandwich.
Yeah.
Where, you know, it's the same thing they do to, they kill people that way with a peanut butter sandwich. Anyway, I have started talking about Dr. Harrington's...
And his search for Planet X.
Right.
And amazingly, I found an article on the UK Independent from October of 95, which literally is, the title is Boldly Going in Search of Planet X. Four NASA probes may discover whether something lurks in deepest space and is heading toward us. So anyway, I'm going to post the link to that. That's
95. Yeah, if you could post that, that would be
yeah,
great.
Yeah, that's 95. I can barely believe it.
I didn't even know about that article. I have the articles from the early 1980s. I've got the classic New York Times article, which I had scanned into a JPEG photo of the actual New York Times and then the Washington Post article.
Uh-huh.
But in the New York Times article of 1983, they state that they're sending up the infrared, they're launching their new infrared astronomical satellite to try to look for Planet X. And the title of this article from the New York Times was "The Search Clues Grow Stronger in the Search for Planet X." I mean, this is what the actual headline in the
New York
Times.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not a phony name. It's a name that was given by this astronomical community. To indicate the unknown planet that was seen, observed out there in space by astronomers since as long ago as 1781, when they first discovered the outer planets, a couple of the outer planets, Uranus and Neptune, they had noticed the perturbations in these outer planets, meaning that it's, let me give you an example of a perturbation. You have a track runner running around this track, and every time he gets to a particular point in the track, someone grabs him by the arm and yanks him off the track momentarily. And then he gets back on the track and continues to run a nice smooth course around the track. But every time he gets to the one point, that same person grabs him by the arm and yanks him off of the track. That's what was happening to these outer planets in their orbits. Uranus and Neptune, they would get yanked off their orbit. They call this perturbations. And moreover, as time grew by, this was 1781 now. As time went on, we got into the 20th century. Clyde Tombaugh, the great astronomer who discovered Pluto, discovered Pluto in the process of looking for Planet X. Percival Lowell, the great astronomer, actually built a whole observatory in Arizona called the Lowell Observatory, from which his astronomer, Clyde Tombaugh, did a search for Planet X. Imagine a whole observatory built just to look for Planet X. So this planet has been sought out by the astronomical community for centuries. Anyway, the perturbations, as time went by, Dr. Harrington comes along in the late 20th century and discovers not only are there perturbations, but the perturbations are now becoming downward. Okay, so not only to the side, but it's like taking that runner going around the track and pulling him down into a hole. He steps into a, he slides off to, into a ditch. Let's put it that way. This runner, every time he hits a certain point in the track, he slides down into a ditch. So he's going off the track and downward. That's what was happening to Uranus and Neptune and even Pluto now, the newly discovered Pluto. So Dr. Harrington calculated that this planet's coming in from below our ecliptic. Now, the ecliptic is something I like to liken to a big circular revolving table at a Chinese restaurant. And I like to put it in very vivid mental pictures, otherwise, so that people can see and use this as a frame of visual reference in the future whenever they think about Planet X and what's happening. You have this revolving circular table at a Chinese restaurant, and at the very center you have this bright lamp, which is the sun. And then as you place various sized fruits at various point distances outward from the center of the table. You might have a grape for planet Earth, and then you might have a big grapefruit for Jupiter.
Yeah.
And then you might have a tiny little, sunflower seed or sesame seed representing Pluto.
Mm-hmm.
At the very outermost portion now, now below this revolving table, visualize that there is a huge bubblegum bubble encircling the entire table. Okay? And then someone fires a ball bearing, say with a slingshot ball bearing, from the floor off to the side of the table. Now this ball bearing travels this relatively straight line into, through the bubblegum bubble surrounding the table, and toward the bottom of the table. That's where Planet X is. Planet X is like that ball bearing coming in from off to the side of our ecliptic. The ecliptic is the plane about which all the planets revolve around the sun. And that's likened to the revolving table at the Chinese restaurant. Underneath the ecliptic, someone fires a ball bearing. That's Planet X coming in at an angle of about 40 degrees to the ecliptic. So if you were to measure the angle of its trajectory below the table to the plane of the table itself, you would measure an angle of about 40 degrees. So you can see it's coming in closer. It's coming in from below, off to the side. It's coming in closer and closer, and its target, its object, its irresistibly drawn mate, shall we say, is the sun, because the sun is huge in its, not only in its energy, but in its mass. And we know that gravity is, from basic physics, I studied this in my basic physics courses, and many of us do in high school, that and in college, that gravity is the force between two bodies. We just talked about it before. So you have gravitational pull between all the planets encircling the sun, as well as the gravitational pull between this long-distant object, Planet X, and the sun. And that's how comets come into our solar system, incidentally. It's a very common thing to see comets coming in. Halley's Comet, for example, comes in every 110 years or whatever. I don't know exactly what the period is. But you can see this comet is also, just like all other comets, it's periodic. Even though they don't know exactly what it is, Harrington said it might be a brown dwarf, which is really huge, something that could almost be a sun or a dying sun. But it's a fantastic mass. The point is, it travels on a cometary orbit, sort of like a bicycle chain.
What is very amazing is this book that I wrote, Obregon Chronicles. It was actually put into my head, I now realize, by voice-to-skull technology. But when I was in Austria, again, I was told that the information was found in King Solomon's temple and translated, and then I was the one to release it. Well, anyway, one of the things, it talks about the Sirius Tristar system and the dead sun of Sirius, and it would resemble exactly what you are talking about, a dwarf star. And one of my friends, who is an amateur astronomer, he believes that this particular star is actually in our orbit. Now, I don't know how that can be, but he explained it to me, and it sounded very logical and correct. But, you know, we would have to have an astronomer, you know, explain it to us.
You know, the phenomenon of comets is very much like a pendulum or a bus on a regular route. It goes south in a long, elongated orbit, and then it comes back again, just like a pendulum swings. It swings to one end because it's being pulled by a particular force to the end of its travel, and then it comes all the way back to an equally an opposite attracting point, and it just continues that way back and forth. It's like two pitchers warming up in the bullpen, you know, throwing one pitcher. Each pitcher is a sun, and the ball is like Planet X, and the pitcher hurls that sun from one pitcher to the other. And that's exactly what happens here. We have physical forces that dictate movement of it. It's drawn in by gravity, and it's hurled out with a force so that it projects, it's able to travel in almost a straight line. It's really an elliptical line, but because of the ellipse is so stretched out, it looks almost like a straight line, just like a baseball would travel in sort of a curved arc from one pitcher to the other, from one thrower to the other thrower. Well, that's how the planet Earth is ripped out by the force of the looping force as this planet whips around the sun, the distant sun, 50 billion miles out, which is what it was estimated to be. And then it loops around that distant sun and comes back to our sun, which is a twin sun of the distant sun. We have a binary solar system. Binary solar systems are very common, according to astronomers. That means two suns in a solar system, even though that one sun is way, way out. It's like you have a cousin, you know, but that cousin doesn't live with you in the same house. He lives maybe a couple blocks away, but close enough to come and visit you every so often. Well, that's what Planet X is, a visiting cousin. And each house is like the sun, you know, it whips around from one to the other. It takes about 3,600 years, we found, from historical records, ancient archaeological records, and from the Bible. You put them both together, they both agree. The Bible and ancient archaeological records agree that it's about 3,600 years. The first one was first passage after the creation. The creation was around 11,000 BC, and there was a biblical scholar who did this calculation that the creation was around 11,000 BC. I think he's been about the only one who's been able to make that determination. But then there came the destruction of Earth brought by God around 8,600 BC to 9,000 BC. That was the sinking of Atlantis. Then came the next one, the flood of Noah's Day, 5,000 BC. If you do your arithmetic, you'll see that there's about 3,600 years between the 8,600 to 9,000 BC sinking of Atlantis and the 5,000 BC flood of Noah. Then you go from the flood of Noah coming more closer in time.
Now we're
to
just about
the Exodus from Egypt.
Yeah, we're just about to go to break now. Do you know the astronomer Tom Van Flandern, who worked with Dr. Harrington?
Yes.
And he's still alive, isn't he?
He's been intimidated. He's been scared, I think, to be silent.
Yeah. He's the head of metaresearch.org, and people can go there and read all of his work. And we will be right back here on Rumor Mill News Radio. We're talking about Planet X, what it can bring, and how you can save yourself. My guest is John DiNardo, and we will be right back. And you're listening to Rumor Mill News Radio. This is Raylan Allen. I'm talking with John DiNardo, and we're talking about Planet X. And oh boy, Planet X. So John, I had just mentioned this other astronomer, whose name I can't even remember right now, Tom Van Flandern. Now, you think that he was intimidated into shutting up because he's still, his archive is really quite extraordinary.
Well,
you know,
that's good news.
MetaResearch.org.
Say that website again, please.
MetaResearch.org.
MetaResearch.org. I also remember that, and I would urge everyone else to go there and read his material. I had just heard a rumor that he was intimidated, and it could be that he was. I'm sure that they try to muzzle anybody who's a credible authority like Dr. Harrington, Dr. Van Flandern, but it could be that now it's getting so close, and the desire to break away from that suppression, could have caused him to start speaking out more. Now the power elite are losing control. They cannot, well, they can still intimidate people, but their power to intimidate is weakening because things are becoming more disorganized. So I'm very thankful and glad to hear about, I'm so glad you told me about metaresearch.org. I'm going to go there and start studying some of the work that he has presented there. Let me go on to say that if you do your arithmetic, you'll find out that the time period, the time interval, this is wonderful because now we have an approximate verification of the time intervals in history when Planet X came in and how we can correspond them to to mutually agreeing, mutually confirming sources that this, these were the time intervals, the time periods when it came in. These mutually confirming sources would be the Bible and archaeologists who are, you know, totally secular and unrelated to the Bible. They both agree that the first time was around 8600 to 9000 BC. Now, that particular point in time, I can't say that, cannot say that we have absolute. I have to check with Harold Camping, this very old, aged but biblical scholar who did a lot of the time studies of the Bible, and find out if indeed 8600 was the time when Genesis chapter 10 tells us that Peleg was the time when Peleg lived in the days. He was named Peleg because the earth was split, divided, or split at that time that he lived. Now, I have to find out from Camping's research if that was around 8600 years, according to his research of time, solely based upon the Bible and no other sources at all. If he says, yeah, that was around 8600, then that would agree with the scientists such as Brent Miller and other scientists who came long before him, who claimed that the sinking of Atlantis, according to archaeological records, and also, you know, geological studies have shown that that sinking was around 8600 to 9000 BC also. Okay, so take that as the first destructive incursion of Planet X into our solar system. The second one came about 3600 years later, 5000 BC, when Camping, from his biblical studies, claims that that was the time of Noah's flood. This is what brought about the flood. If you read in the Bible, in Genesis, in the early chapters of Genesis, the earth was separated by the firmament. And I have a feeling, that, although I haven't done extensive studies, I believe that it was a vast vapor of water, a body of water above the earth. And the Bible tells us that there was no rain during those periods because there was enough dew and moisture in the air that they didn't need any rain. So the flood of Noah's day was the very first. Now, again, I have to confirm this. I've heard this, but I haven't really confirmed it. But the flood of Noah was the very first rainfall upon earth. I hope I'm correct in making that statement. And that's why everybody thought Noah was crazy when he was building this huge ark that God had dictated to him to build. Now, I don't know if God spoke to him, that I don't believe God came to him as a person, but probably spoke to his mind, just as God spoke to the minds of all his prophets with these compelling thoughts. So strongly compelling that they actually went out and did what God told them to do. And that's why Noah worked all those years to build the ark. But that was around 5000 BC, which is 3600 years after the first incursion. So we had the second incursion of Planet X, 5000 BC. Then 3600 years later, you had the Exodus and all the plagues of Egypt leading up to the Israelites' exodus from Egypt, which was around 1450 to 1500 BC. We don't know exactly. During that particular, this third incursion of Planet X, okay, now we're coming up to the fourth incursion of Planet X around the year 2012 or 2011, 2013, who knows, somewhere around there. But you can see the intervals are very regular, very predictable, roughly 3,600 years, 8,600 BC, 5,000 BC, 1,500 BC, and now 2,000 and whatever, somewhere in the early 21st century. Now, you might say, well, yeah, but maybe it's 50 years from now, maybe 60 years from now. We don't know exactly.
You know, John, you've done an awful lot of work on how we can save ourselves, too. I mean, besides just developing this relationship with God, and we're going to go to break any second now. And I'm wondering if we can use the last half hour to teach people what they need to do, how they need to prepare for this.
Yes, in fact, I wish we had 10 more hours because there's so much evidence that I haven't even touched upon. I mean, secular and scientific, secular archaeological evidence, ancient Chinese evidence, ancient Hopi Indian evidence, ancient Mayan evidence. Oh, just so much. But
well, we can bring you back next week. How's that
okay.
sound?
Yes.
And we'll make this a continuation. But for people who may miss next week, let's try to give some ideas. You talked about the dome homes. And you said it didn't even have to be a very big one.
There's so much that you can do.
Okay. Well, as I said, I know we're going to...
Well, let me, real quick, if I can get this in. I want to say a few things. There's so much on my mind, I don't know where to begin. But with this incursion coming in, people might say, well, it's 50 years, it could be 50 years from now. I might be dead by then. Why make me worry about this thing if it's not going to come in for another 50, 60 years? But we see evidence that it's coming in a couple of years. I mean, I want to get into it real quickly when we come back from the break. It's
okay.
Still allow time for survival to tell you why I think it's coming in a couple of years.
Okay, folks, we're going to be right back with John DiNardo and Planet X on Rumor Mill News Radio on the Micro Effect Radio Network. We'll be back. My guest is John DiNardo, and he's going to tell us right now why he believes Planet X is coming in the next 2 years.
Okay, there are several, in fact, numerous reasons why I believe it's coming in soon. As an example, one of the reasons is when you see a storm approaching, you know, a very horrible storm coming, it doesn't switch on like a light switch instantaneously. You get early signs. You see a growing uneasiness or disturbances in the sky. You see the sky getting darker. You see the wind start whipping up. The leaves start blowing around. The sky starts changing colors. You get early signs, and then gradually the beginning of this disturbance begins to accelerate and accentuate until it reaches a pitch, its peak of lightning, thunder, tremendous downpours of rain, etc. Well, that's what's happening with Planet X now. We're seeing the disturbances on planet Earth, which are so blatant that you have to be in a coma to miss them.
Right.
We have earthquake activity now. I've done the studies. I've looked. I've been following the USGS records of earthquakes. Right now, and Brent Miller of the Horizon Project says exactly the same thing. He says, we have been studying and charting, and we have the charts posted on our website, Brent Miller's website, thehorizonproject.com, of the earthquake activity, which is increasing so hyperbolically, if you look at it graphically, in comparison to 2 or 3 decades ago. It used to be very rare that you would get a 6.0 magnitude earthquake anywhere in the world.
Right.
It used to be maybe every once every several months or 4, 5, 6 months. Now, every other day. Every other day, practically. 2 times a week.
That's right.
You're getting a 6.0 or higher. Italy just had a horrific earthquake. But other earthquakes are even more horrific than the one in Italy have been occurring so frequently at uninhabited areas so that people don't notice them. There's not reported. The mass media wants to suppress the information. And because if a lot of people aren't killed in these tremendous 6.5, 6.8, 7.2s, and I'm not exaggerating, many of them have been above 7.0, like 7.2, 7.3 that have been happening recently in areas where there's not a lot of people or in the ocean. So they don't get reported, but the fact is they're there, and it certainly does signal horrific things happening with the Earth seismically.
Yeah.
So we're getting earthquakes that are just out of control. I mean, frequency and severity is off the charts, literally.
Well,
speaking of charts, here's another example. The sun has, up until this period of quiescence, which occurred about a year ago, when the sun went mysteriously quiet and with very few sunspots and solar flares, up until that point, the solar flares were so great in magnitude that the solar scientists had to create new and higher classes of flares just to classify them, to put them into a particular grade or classification. The X class, the M class, I'm not too familiar with it, but I know new classes of flares have been created to accommodate these extraordinarily unprecedented flares that have been occurring. Now, scientists are also saying, don't get too comfortable with this quiet sun right now, because it's going to start really flaring up. even worse than before.
That's right.
In their future.
That's what they're telling us.
And so this is, in fact, this is like the calm before the storm. I'm almost as troubled by this solar quiescence as I would be by solar hyperactivity. I mean, just the fact that you're waiting for, it's like a huge giant inhaling, waiting in preparation to blow you over. You know what I mean? Like you just
wait to see the sun
inhaling, getting ready to put out these tremendous deathly bursts of energy. And when that happens, like you were saying, we're going to have electrical, because the sun is an electrical generator, puts out charged particles, protons, ionized protons, which are positive charged particles, and electrons. And when these electrical particles blast at the Earth, they cause this electrical havoc and destruction to all of our electronics, telecommunications, power grids, everything goes down. And as you said, we are going to have starvation. I want to get back, I guess we don't have too much time about all the reasons, but I have been studying the weather, and I've been videotaping nothing but severe weather reports. I cut out all the other stuff and videotaped just the severe weather reports from around the year of 2004 till now. I have 250 to 300 hours of nothing but severe weather reports videotaped, documented right from the Weather Channel. I've got videotapes all over my basement showing, indicating these, and I try to put clips of them on my Planet X radio broadcast. But anyway, I'll get back to what you wanted to talk about, because we don't have much time, and that is the survival mechanisms.
Yes, that would be so good. People need hope. And if it's something they can build in their backyard, that's going to give them hope.
That's right. The first thing is walk with God. As you're building your dome home, or as you're buying a dome home or putting it together, you feel the presence of God. And you don't have to see him as Jesus. He will reveal his character to you as the Savior, as God the Savior. Just feel his presence. Don't think about talking to him. You don't need to talk to him. Just go along with your hammer and your nails. Your whatever you're doing, taking to prepare yourself for taking care of your home, or taking care of your family, cooking the dinner, you just feel the presence of God as often as you can throughout each day. Now, in terms of practical things, he will guide you spiritually, and then he will guide you to do the practical things, just as he guided Joseph in the book of Genesis, so that they could save the people of Egypt from starvation. Joseph was given visions by God telling them about the famine. Pharaoh had these dreams that he could not interpret, and Joseph, under the guidance of the mind of God, from the mind of God, was taken out of prison, released from prison, and the mind of God gave Joseph the prophecies, the interpretation of the dream, the unraveling of this mysterious dream, where Pharaoh saw seven fat cows followed by seven lean cows. The seven lean cows ate up the seven fat cows. And Pharaoh actually released him from prison, Joseph, and made him the second highest ruler in all of Egypt, because Joseph, through God, by the mind of God, was given the interpretation of the dream, that there would be 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. So now we do exactly what Joseph was told by God to do. God is telling us in the book of Genesis what to do. Start storing food, canned food, stuff that, now here's what I store. I've been buying canned sardines and canned salmon. It's easy to remember the two fish that start with the letters S-A. They are very nutritious.
Yes.
And they keep for a long time, too. Make sure your sardines are from Canada or from the southern waters. Don't buy anything from Poland or Mediterranean or anything, because it's all polluted. But try to look for a product of Canada, or a product of Alaska, or a product of maybe, Chile on the label. And you start buy as many sardines and salmon cans as you can now, because you're going to be saving your cousins, your wife, your children, your neighbors. They're all going to come to you for food. And you're going to either have to fight them off, or invite them in.
Right. That's correct. And are you going to kill your friends and family?
Right. Exactly.
I know.
There's going to be people killed over a can of food.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I know I have a friend who has moved to a very small town, if you can imagine this, 70 people. And in that town, there's a mine. And her plan, if ever she can come up with all of the money, it is to, and believe me, this town is so far away from everyone that unless you know that it exists, you would never be able to get there. So they would only have the people of the town to care for. And she is planning, if she can figure out how to do it, to put enough food in that cave that when this happens, that entire town will emerge. And that's the way, folks, that we need to do this. We need to work in communities to be able to survive Planet X. We'll be back on the other side of the break. My guest is John DiNardo, and we're telling you how you can survive this. This is Rumor Mill News Radio. I'm talking with John DiNardo, and John is now talking about how we can survive. And I just related the story of a friend of mine in a little tiny town way up in the mountains that has an old mine. And I think that we could do this no matter where we live. You know, go out in the wilderness. You know, buy an acre of land, and you can sink a dome home. What I've been told is concrete dome homes, you know, I guess they have steel reinforcement. I'm not really sure what they are. But they can either be partially sunk or sunk all the way. And that's what I've been told will survive this. What have you been told?
Pretty much what you just mentioned, Ray Allen, that the dome home is, you know, the best protection against wind. It's just there's so many other devastating forces besides wind, though, that we have to worry about. But the dome home is the first place to begin. Mark Hazelwood had related a story about a woman who had a dome in her basement, and I would imagine this was a small one, maybe 10 feet in diameter, where she lay down inside this dome during a tornado, and she was one of the few people who were saved, even though the house was collapsed around her. So the dome home is very important. Also, I wanted to mention that there are three. Now, these are things that are probably more likely to be a big problem for people, and that is the three substances that all animals, human beings and animals, need to survive. The most vital of these three substances is air. We're going to have contaminated air with the volcanoes erupting and also with the iron oxide dust cloud that is swept across Earth as Planet X, the tail of this huge planetary comet, sweeps Earth, just as is related. The last time it passed in the Book of Exodus, around 1500 B.C. in Egypt, when it swept the planet Earth, turned all the waters red with iron oxide dust.
Right.
And Mark Hazelwood was saying in one of his speeches that, of course, it's obviously that stuff can kill you if you breathe it in. I guess a lot of people were killed back then in Egypt when that happened.
Yeah.
It depends on how close it comes to you, how concentrated it is, how, you know, when it passes by. It can vary, but you need to be able to purify your air somehow, and it's something that I haven't studied very much, and I think I better start studying, and all of us can get together.
I think we all better start studying this, yes. And if any of our listeners has all the information already, please send it to me.
Right. In fact, we could even have discussions weekly on your show, however you might want to allot a certain amount of time to preparations for breathing pure air in a deadly polluted environment.
And then we've got water. My God, the water is going to be so horribly polluted.
That's
how
right.
are we going to clean it?
Okay, well, here's a couple of things now. I've been studying some of this. Of course, we know about the Berkey water filters, which is very good.
Uh-huh.
And any gravity fed, it has to be a gravity fed water filter. What? In addition to that, before you have the filter, you've got to have the water. Now, what I've done, one source of water is your empty bottles. I've been telling all my relatives, save me your empty milk gallon plastic bottles. I don't care if it's plastic. I mean, if I have to survive, I'm not going to worry about the plastic because I'm going to filter it anyway. So they save me all their empty gallon jugs of soda, half-gallon jugs of Pepsi or Coke, and then water, juice bottles, et cetera, any plastic bottles, even down to the 12-ounce size of drinking water bottles, you know, whatever brand you're buying.
Oh, my God.
I save all those, and I try to rinse them out real good and fill them up with cold tap water and then store them all in boxes. I try to save cardboard boxes and find the right size boxes to accommodate each different size of plastic.
Do you put anything in the water, like a little bit of bleach or anything?
No, you know why I don't? Because when the time comes, I'm going to be putting it, I'm going to be disinfecting it when the time comes to filter that water.
Okay.
Now, if I had to drink it right out of the bottle, I it wouldn't kill me. I mean, it's water that's been stored for months and months in an old, rinsed out, empty milk gallon, plastic milk gallon.
Now,
but if I had to drink it right out of there, it wouldn't kill me. It would keep me alive, but I couldn't
filter
it too.
We've always been told not to store water in milk jugs.
Well, you're probably right because of bacteria, right?
Right.
Okay, as far as for the bacteria, you have a number of things you can use. One is ozonation. You can ozonate the water, and that's how I contacted Poland Springs, and what they do, that's exactly what they do. They run ozone gas through the water, which kills all the bacteria.
Well, how do we do that?
You can buy an ozonator. You can check it out, ozonator, on the internet.
Okay.
And the second thing is silver. Now, you can get mild silver protein, which works, but also more effect probably, I don't want to sound like an expert on this, but super silver, if you go to IH site, that's the letters IH as in Henry, SITE.com. IHSITE.com. Look up super silver, you'll find these people have done all the scientific research and paid the money, the thousands of dollars needed to get government studies done on the efficacy of their super silver. You put a few drops of that in, or whatever is recommended amount of super silver in each gallon of your stored water, and that should kill the bacteria. You can also impregnate, you know, the silver wafers that you can get from any coin dealer. I bought about 18 of them, you know, a long time ago when silver was cheap. But right now, I guess it would cost you maybe $20 for a 1 ounce, one troy ounce, pure silver from Engelhard, 99.99% pure silver wafer. They call them silver bars, but they more look more like those little chocolate wafers. You put them in the bottle. I put them in my glass drinking jar in my fridge, which has a little spigot on it. And my water is constantly exposed to pure silver wafers, which I sort of buff them off with a Scotch-Brite pad just in case there's any film on there.
Sure.
In order to expose more silver, pure silver, to the water. So we're drinking tiny silver molecules every time we take a drink of water in my house.
Because you're getting the silver molecules
down to the molecular level. I know there's very few, there's not very many, but after a period of time, it gets to be effective, you know.
It just reminded me of my grandmother. When my grandfather would bring the milk back that we used in our house rather than the milk that went to the creamery, she had these long, narrow pans where she would pour the milk in, allow the cream to rise, and in every single pan, she had silver dollars.
How many did she have in each pan?
Oh, gosh, I think it was four. I think there were four silver dollars in each pan.
That's very wise, because the more you have, the more silver. Remember, it's not very many molecules are going to sublimate from the solid state into the liquid. So that the more silver wafers or silver dollars you have, the better off you are. If you can get the wafers, you're better off, because they are virtually pure silver, whereas your silver quarters or half dollars or silver dollars are about 75% silver, and then there's some alloy mixed in, you know. But still in all, you're better off using a silver quarter than nothing at all.
Than nothing at all, right.
Purify your
water.
And they have proven in ancient and old days that it did keep the milk from turning sour. You want to do that to kill the bacteria. You want to impregnate it. Take some super silver, impregnate the ceramic filter of your gravity filter cartridge with silver. And I do that with my reverse osmosis system. Every once in a while, I open up the canisters of that the tap water is pumped through the water lines. I open it up and put in some mild silver protein, several eyedroppers full, and then I close it back up and I let it sit. I don't let the water run through. I just let it sit, because the longer it sits, the more bacteria it's going to kill. Then I turn on the water faucet and allow the water line, that is, and allow the water to run through the line into the filter for about 30 seconds, which pushes more water deeper into the second filter, the second filter cartridge, etc. So the water, and then I let it turn off the water and let it reside there for maybe in a half hour, an hour or so. And then I keep on doing that every half hour and turn the water on for 1 minute and let the water get pushed through, so that ultimately by the time it gets to my third stage, which is a reverse osmosis membrane cartridge, it's really had a long time to sit there and kill the bacteria, any bacteria that might be festering in there.
Oh, this is amazing. And John, we're just about at the time when they're going to cut us off. We've got about 2 minutes. And
okay.
So what are the closing thoughts? And I promise next week we'll have you back on, and we're going to talk about all of the proof that you have put together.
Okay, well, the closing thoughts, we've talked about survival. We need to talk more about the three vital substances, air, water, and food, to stay alive. And the most vital is the spiritual contact with God, our Savior.
That's correct.
We want to look at Him as God, our Creator. He's also that, too. So, you know, when you think of God, just think of Him as your Creator, and then He will unveil to you His character. And you'll see if he's the same character as that God who came to Earth 2,000 years ago.
That's exactly right.
Your walk with Him in your mind, feeling His presence, and you're allowing Him to guide you as He guided Joseph to save from extinction the people of Egypt. You do the same thing, because we're coming around to that same kind of test.
And so, folks, we're the modern-day Noahs. And remember that Noah was, everybody that Noah knew thought he was crazy.
Yes, and be proud that they think you're crazy.
They do.
Of your higher knowledge.
Yeah, they do. This has been just illuminating, John. I mean, I know that you're right. We could do 30 more hours on this. And maybe we should literally, once a week, or maybe once every other week, devote 3 hours to Planet X preparation.
I would so much appreciate that.
I think everybody would. Folks, this is Raylan Allen, and this is Friday, and I don't have a clue who's going to be my guest next week, because my brain is full right at the moment. But I guarantee you that it's going to be just as fascinating as this hour has been. So tune in Friday, same time, same place, for Rumor Mill News Radio on the Micro Effect Radio Network. We will see you then.